following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, that's the music. It's time to get rocking here. Welcome on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week, to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Little John. Joining me in studio today, though, one of my favoriteest guests, and it's been too long since we've had you here, Mr. Derek Simmons.
It's always good to be here.
Hey, we're stoked to have you. It turns out, my man Matt, he's out of town, but it turns out I've been kind of leaning into Derek for a while going, bro, what's up? And annual meeting season apparently is at the rudder.
It has been, and now we're past it. We have all survived annual. So annual meeting season, for those of you that don't know, corporations are required to have an annual meeting of shareholders once a year. And typically, you have a meeting of directors immediately afterward. And these things are required by statute. Well, the best time to do it is right around the end of the year, because then you can do tax planning.
Yes, you can.
So I participate in a number of those, and that tends to eat up the schedule.
Yeah. Trying to reach Derek during this period of time, it's a little like writing a paper message, putting it in a bottle, and throwing it in the ocean. I mean, like, hey, what's going to...
Well, now, it almost sounds like you're saying I wouldn't get back to you, which is not quite
accurate.
That's
actually not true. You're probably... you're arguably the most responsive attorney I've ever met, so... And I've met more than just you, just so we're clear.
And it gets me into trouble sometimes. Derek, you were supposed to just shut up on that one, but instead you responded.
Right. It's that or, but on the flip side, right? So here, this is the subtle endorsement nudge, right? Which, you know, I mean, work with the attorneys you like. That's important. But people will often sit there and go like, well, what about rate this, that, and the other? And go, yeah, but speed per hour matters too.
It does. It does.
And just the idea of, does it get done at all? Because one thing I can really compliment you on is rarely do I have to follow up with you about anything.
Yes. If the client's following up, you're too late. That is something I learned from my mentor, Don Laird, a million years ago.
Yeah. So there you go. I know the guy.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's funny. I have some stuff that I prepared here, but it occurred to me as I've got you here, and now that it's in the rudder for you, with the annual meetings season, that is, it's kind of an interesting question. You know, I thought about talking about the concept of tariffs today.
Right.
But before we just like layer in, because that's kind of the thing in the news, right? Like, that's the thing.
Everywhere.
Right, at least in the financial realm, right? And so I was going to say, like, hey, what does this mean for you, right? But I'm going to ask you, since I've got you here, and rarely can I, it's like, The cool part is, like, Derek can't bill me for this right
That's
now.
Right. Captive audience.
So, I guess I get a question a lot in finance about, hey, should I, like, should I open an LLC or an S-Corp or C-Corp or whatever? And there's a lot of layers to that. I don't know how easy or how much time it takes to really help people that even care. Plus, a lot of folks are like, it's not applicable. So,
right.
I'm just kind of wondering, though, is there like a spiel that you give folks when they're trying to determine whether or not they need a corporate entity?
There is. And actually, sadly for you, it doesn't work on radio, but there's stick figures. There's a whole artistic presentation.
Uh-huh.
In 12 years of art school, I learned to draw stick figures.
Okay.
But I can give you the oral version of that.
I'm interested.
All right. So...
if we get to tariffs, we get to tariffs. But I'm okay. Interested in this part because I've got this expert. And like the tariff thing, it's already getting deferred, right? That's the short answer to this one. It's like, threats. And then it's like, okay, let's talk. And everybody goes, okay, deferral. All right, so there, you're caught up on tariffs.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, so the first question is, do you have some sort of an asset that is kind of a business enterprise? And the standard versions of those are rental properties, mm-hmm, or an operating business of some sort.
Yeah. As a like little aside for people that are unaware, a rental property is a business.
It's true. If you're doing it right, it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it should be.
Yeah.
Right. It's and so I have this little spiel too when I talk about the ways that people make money, and I talk to them about banks, and they say, you know, well, I want to get a loan for a business, and I go, here's the thing, banks make loans to things they understand. Right. And what they don't understand is, why are you asking me for money if you're not making any money? OK, that's what banks know.
That's true.
So when they're like, hey, I got this great idea for a business, why won't a bank give me a loan? I said, because that's vapor. Right. But if you say, I have this business making money and I would like the bank to give me a loan
to expand.
Yeah. Then the bank goes, go on.
<That's> right.
And so it's because they're just businesses. And so like rental property is something a bank really understands, and banks understand collateral.
It's true.
Right?
And that's a great part about rental property, if you do it right, is the collateral is the property.
Yes. Yes.
And so in theory, you can bootstrap yourself into a loan, have the tenants pay for it, accrue equity, and also possibly cash flow. It's a fun way to do business.
Yeah, let's stick back to you. You know, I don't want to take
my
you
stick
too
figures.
Far. Your stick figures, yeah. But you know, I just love that little aside because people are like, well, the bank gave me a loan, and I'm like, well,
yep.
So anyway,
all right. So the first question you've got to have is some sort of business that you want to protect, and the idea is that you contribute some assets to this business and you want to limit your liability to the assets that you put into the entity.
Oh,
so in a rental property.
Yeah, no. Yeah, further explain that, because you're like,
sure,
you put assets into the entity, you want to limit your liability to assets. And I'm like, okay, talky, explain.
All right. So let me give you an example that I have never heard of happening, but that in theory could.
Okay.
You have a rental property and you own it personally.
Okay, so that just means it's titled not, in my name.
It's right. It's titled in your name. It's not in a limited liability company or a corporation or anything.
Okay.
And then somebody gets injured on that property. And then they sue you. And they sue you because they are injured and they want to be made whole. Well, your first thing you're going to do is turn to insurance. Everybody should have insurance on all real estate.
Right.
But if insurance was just one sentence that said, hey, if anything goes wrong, we'll take care of it, then I would rely on that.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's 60 pages of limitations and exclusions.
Right.
So, you know, and I actually learned about this because I had rental property in Kansas where there was a flood and it destroyed the garden level apartments in this apartment complex that I owned. And the problem was, well, I had to pay to fix everything in the garden level. I submitted to insurance and they said, this is not a flood. And I'm like, what do you mean? This is water all over the garden level.
Yeah,
they said, no.
This is a non-naturally occurring event where you supplied the water and therefore.
No, actually they said a flood is defined in the policy as a river leaving its banks and entering onto the premises.
Okay.
What we have here is a very high water table that seeped in through the walls. That is not a flood. There's no coverage, Mr. Simmons, which was frustrating. So,
yes.
So anyway, insurance.
So you got an education in insurance.
I did. Insurance is not the end all be all.
Not at all.
More important, I think, is that the rental property that you've got is just the tip of the iceberg. Somebody is hurt badly enough, insurance doesn't cover it. They get the rental property, they get your bank accounts, they get a portion of your house if you end up declaring bankruptcy. They can get everything. Everything. So the idea is...
Yeah. And by the way, this sounds terrifying. When you say they can, that means it's not out of the realm of possible.
That's
a bunch
correct.
Of stuff that has to be proven too. Like, it's not like somebody shows up, they're negligent, get hurt on your property, and all of a sudden it's your fault. But it doesn't mean they couldn't attempt.
Yes.
Right? And so that's why we put layers of protection in place.
There are many off ramps on this one.
Sure.
First of all, it's their fault. First of all, they didn't actually get injured. Second of all, it's their fault. Third of all, insurance covered it. Fourth, insurance did not cover it, but the equity in your property that is the rental property handled it. It's only way out there in the deep, deep water where they end up coming after your house.
Right. Now, just so we're clear, everybody that's listening, first, I'm not wishing lawsuits on anybody.
Nobody wants
that. But second, If somebody brings a lawsuit, they'll probably accuse you personally too. Maybe your dog, maybe your kids, your next door neighbor, anybody they can think of, they will probably throw the book at just to see if somebody will show up and settle.
A thorough plaintiff's attorney treats it like spaghetti and throws it against the wall against everybody and see who gets it stuck to.
Yeah. So that's what we like to call this in technical terms, if you're the one on the receiving end of the lawsuit, is sucks. That's the technical term, but it is what it is.
The suckage is real. All right. So the idea on a limited liability entity is you take that property and you contribute it as capital to an LLC or a corporation.
Okay. Can I ask just a simple clarify? I know the answer, but I'd like you to explain it to our listeners. So when you say you put it in the LLC, what does that actually mean?
It really means you retitle the property. So I had this property and the name on the deed was Derek. Mm-hmm. And now the name on the deed is going to be, you know, Derek's LLC or something.
Okay. And so this is real. So it is that simple, right?
It is to contribute property to an LLC. There are a couple of other steps we can go into after a break, maybe.
Yeah. This is perfect. Let's take a break. Okay. Timing's right. This is really a good thing. The reason I want to take the break is the way you put things into an LLC is similar to S corporations or C corporations, or we sometimes talk about this on the show too, into a trust. All of these are relevant, and I've got this attorney that can explain why I want to take advantage. So let's stick around, everybody. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Derek Simmons.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where I have got special guest Derek Simmons. He's been on the show many times before, old friend of the show. If you're just getting caught up, you're going to want to grab the podcast on this. It turns out I am saving everybody listening hundreds, if not thousands of dollars by getting you access to fabulous information from a great attorney. Okay. And so, Derek, first of all, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure. Okay.
We are talking about, I kind of shanghaied the show, right? And I asked Derek, hey, I get questions about whether or not to use corporate entities all the time, like an LLC or something. And the answer is maybe. Right. So listen to the rest of the show on the podcast to get caught up. When we got to break, though, we had just started talking about, like, how does one put their business or a rental property or I don't know in an LLC?
Right. So if it's real estate, you retitle the real estate.
OK.
If it is anything else, any other kind of a business, usually it's just listed somewhere on your operating agreement as a capital contribution. Now, what does that mean? Nothing. If I have a desk at work and I make it a capital contribution to my corporation, the desk stays right where it is. I don't have to prepare new ownership documents, but it's in the corporation. Well, how do we know that? Well, for tax purposes, that's where you tend to track what has been contributed because it has tax effects that I'm not going to go into.
Yeah, although secret hint, right? And go talk to your tax pro to confirm this, right? But this can be as simple as I wrote everything down on a spreadsheet, kind of estimated a value, and then put it in the corporate records and said, there's the list.
Yep.
You know, and it actually is not as complicated as you think, but there is, like, you want to sort of track it so that you don't, like, 5 years later go, oh, yeah, I put that in there. Well, when? Oh, a long time ago. Like, really?
And it becomes relevant. Remember, if somebody sues the LLC or corporation and does win whatever's in there.
Yes.
Well, now you have to know what's in there.
Yeah. Yeah, this, by the way, gets into, I don't know that we'll even get a chance to touch on it, but the concept of being intentionally defective. That's a big concept. Maybe it's better for, like, a YouTube carve-out video than for a radio show. But I still want to get back to this idea of, like, what's the LLC supposed to do? Like, great, I got an LLC, and I've titled things in its name, or I've made an operating agreement or whatever. Usually, just so everybody knows, I don't write my own operating agreements. I get Derek to write operating agreements for me because it turns out there are rules you're supposed to follow, and I could screw those up.
Yeah, if you ever get sued and you have an LLC, the first request for production is, prove to me that you're treating this like an LLC rather than your own personal checkbook.
Yes.
And for the way you do that is that the LLC has its own checkbook. It pays its own expenses. It does not buy groceries for you because that's not going to be something an LLC would do. It might distribute money to its owner, which makes perfect sense. And if you're its owner, you can take it and put it in your account and then go buy groceries.
Right.
But it needs to deal only with the business parts of what you're doing.
In simple terms, and I'm going to ask you, I'm going to form this as a question rather than a statement, but it sounds like what you're talking about is the concept of commingling.
Yes, you do not want to commingle.
Okay. So if everybody just, you know, that's just, you don't mix business and pleasure, right? I mean, that's the old joke, but it's your personal and the business stay separate. That's when you say it doesn't buy groceries. It turns out if the business was buying coffee because your clients drink coffee at the office, it can do that.
That is okay.
Right? What it can't do is buy like the groceries that you're going to take home to your family and eat dinner and stuff and prepare for. Like that's a personal expense, not a business expense.
And the IRS cares about that.
Well, and here's the thing that I've always kind of wondered about. Like if you were doing that, what does that potentially do?
Well, commingling assets is a great way to erode the liability shield. That is the whole point of putting the property into the LLC. If you treat it like your personal checkbook, then when you get sued, they end up with your house again, which is what we were trying to prevent by putting the rental property into an LLC.
Okay. So, yeah. So what I'm hearing you say, because I like to summarize these things, even for myself, is if you were to commingle stuff, it makes it look like the business isn't a business anymore, and therefore the protection stops applying.
That is correct.
Okay.
So, yeah.
See, I mean, simple enough, everybody. Like they're not rocket science concepts here. The idea is, well, if you have a business, it better be a real business.
Yeah, really, there are three rules to make it sound, to make it make sure that your liability shield stays intact. One, don't commingle assets.
Okay.
Use business assets for business purposes only. Two, have your corporate or LLC documents in order.
Okay.
So they should be, you should have for an LLC, articles of organization and an operating agreement and minutes of periodic meetings, that sort of thing. And the third one is something that just escaped my head, but it's pretty obvious.
I do that every now and then. You get on a roll and you're like, well, all right, so don't commingle, keep good records, right?
Yes. And the third one, which I will come back to after a break. See, I'm just going to string. Not right now.
No. Yeah, we're not going to do that. But all right, we'll bring it back. It's this is one where I'm like, I would help you, but I'm actually on my heels on this one. Let me get back to, like, we understand the reasons why. Because the truth of the matter is those three things, it's like, well, that's how you break one. But let's say you're not breaking it, right? It's working. And we've kind of established the why is because you want to separate your personal assets from the business assets, right? So if it's working, the idea would be, well, great. If somebody does sue me, then they should be able to say, well, it happened in the business world, not in my personal life. And so my personal assets aren't on the table for this discussion.
Right.
Now, there are times that could be true, right? Because one of the questions that I would ask you is like, first of all, if you did this, is it foolproof? Is it an ironclad scenario? Like,
oh, my favorite word, ironclad. People say, I want an ironclad, and then I have to tell them nothing is ironclad. So what they mean
when taxes, you don't want either.
What they mean when they say ironclad is it cannot possibly be beaten. And so, first of all, the third thing that I was trying to come up with is corporate formalities. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Like the actual proof that you're acting as a business corporately.
Act like, you know, you want to have minutes. So I said corporate documentation, that's the operating agreement and articles. But minutes of meetings is formalities. You want to have your bank set up so that only the people who are authorized to sign for the LLC are on the bank account, that sort of thing.
I like to, I'll summarize it this way. You have to be in business, say you're in business, and act like you're in business.
That sounds accurate right there.
So the first one, like, do the business, right?
All right.
The second one is act like it, you know, document everything. And then the last one is, you know, follow through on it.
Yes. All right, good. I feel better now that I've recovered.
Okay, yeah, good.
I lost.
So, but the ironclad thing, this
yes.
is kind of the, like, how could this get screwed up?
Okay, so first of all, you could screw up one of those three things we just talked about.
Yeah.
Okay. Secondly, it is possible that you make an error that causes a court or a jury to find that you're responsible anyway. So let me give you an example. I have a corporation that runs my law office. If I'm driving to the bank and I get into a wreck with a school bus full of children, which would be tragic and would ruin me forever, would also financially ruin the firm because I was working at the time.
Hmm.
And it would ruin me emotionally, but also financially because I personally am liable for my own negligence.
Well, interestingly enough, I want to ask a couple of clarifying questions,
sure.
Your Honor. Right. So first, was it your fault?
In this particular example, it was my fault.
Okay. So
yes.
that's not.
Yeah, I've got all my defenses, but I'm assuming I was.
And how did were you properly insured?
I was.
Okay, and yet it was a
it exceeded
big enough claim.
It exceeded the amount of the insurance that I have.
Gotcha. And so,
I mean, it's a horrible, horrible day for a number
really
of
is.
Reasons.
Well, especially if it's like a fault accident that is kind of egregiously so.
Yes.
Like, it's been one thing if, like, out of just pure fury, you T-bone a school bus, right?
Right.
That's probably a bad idea.
That really is. So my point was, you're always liable for you're always personally liable for your own negligence.
Mm-hmm.
But the distinction I wanted to make was, if somebody else is driving, if I have somebody on my staff driving to the bank and they get into the same wreck, then my firm is liable, but I am not.
Right.
That's the key part of the limitation of liability. In the rental context, if I am not responsible for maintaining the place, I have a property manager who does that. Or if I've got a commercial tenancy where the tenant is responsible for that, then I will not be personally liable.
Okay. So, by the way, this is exactly why I think having good counsel matters. I mean, maybe you know this stuff, right? But this is also, there's more of a thing for business owners, but not exclusively, right? This is why I still recommend, even if your home is paid for, carrying homeowner's insurance because of the liability elements involved and having an umbrella liability policy are typically good ideas.
Right. I stay far, far away from court myself.
Right, right.
But, but a good portion of the lawyers in the world make their living trying to go grab money from people.
Yeah. And good, bad, or otherwise, whether there is blame that should be assigned or not, the system oftentimes will look to place blame because it's interested in recovering for the damaged party.
Right.
And it's less worried about who they recover from than if they recover.
It talks about making the plaintiff whole.
Right. And so the attorney's job in this case, and we have long discussions about whether or not the system has flaws, but that's not the topic of the day. The topic of the day is, hey, how can you best sort of engineer your life so that the system doesn't destroy it, right? And the idea is, if you could sort of separate the dominoes from each other, if one falls, it doesn't hit the other one.
Right.
Right. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with this, if I could give you a really oversimplified visual analogy.
All right. So as I'm drawing my stick figures.
Yes.
We have just talked about why you would want a limited liability entity.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have kind of a couple of choices among those. But I'm not sure I want to tell you about them just yet.
Well, no, I want to know about the choices, but you're right. I look at the clock and I see we're kind of right at the top of the hour or bottom of the hour. I don't know. We're just past the halfway point at the 4 o'clock. We got to grab a break. So why don't we take this time? When we come back, though, I mean, I know it's this natural spot in your spiel. I would really love to know, like, okay, so we're going to do an entity. How do you choose?
All right.
All right. Let's do that when we come back. This is fun, man. Thanks for sticking around. All right, everybody. Hang out. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Derek Simmons.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. I am the host, at least today, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio, though,
Derek Simmons.
All right, Derek, I don't even want to go through it. I mean, you guys can grab the podcast and stuff. You know how to do that. It's littlejohnfs.com. But we're talking today, and we're really in your world, Derek.
We are. And it's I'm so comfortable, I'm going to crack open a cold one.
Oh, do it. There we go. All right. It's official, right? It's probably not the kind of cold one everybody thinks, but that's all right. So we were talking about entities. We talked about why corporate entities, the idea of separating business assets from personal assets. It's a sort of...
to protect the personal assets, yes.
I'll use this term. I actually kind of originally heard this term in... like terrorists, right? That they say terrorists operate in cells. And I thought, well, like prison cells? And they go, no, it's a cellular thing. The idea is they compartmentalize different groups so the information is not known to everybody. It's a way to make it harder to break an operation, right?
Right.
But that same concept is applicable here is you're making your personal and your business operations cellular in nature. So they're disconnected from each other somewhat to keep the liability from sort of spilling over from one to the other.
Exactly. You want it in just the business where it comes from, where the liability comes from.
Yes. Okay. So I like this idea of compartmentalizing liability or making it cellular, whatever we want to call it. And we've talked a little, first we just kind of used the old, well, let's say you created an LLC. We talked about how you retitle or, you know, make operating agreements to move assets around and so forth. But there's more than LLCs out there. How does somebody figure out what kind of entity they even care about?
Right. Well, so as between the options you've got, we started with sole proprietorship. That is Latin for unlimited personal liability. There's no liability limitation there.
Don't think that's actually the line,
right,
but
fine.
We can go with it.
Fine.
So what you're, but yeah, you are the business and you've separated nothing.
Right.
You're like, it's all commingled.
The only thing worse than that is a partnership, an actual partnership, because then if you and I are partners and you do something stupid, they can come and get my house.
Yeah.
So it's unlimited personal liability of me and my partner. That's terrible.
That does sound like a fairly dumb move in this day and age.
All right. Then they've got something called a limited liability partnership.
An LLP.
Right. Now, this one is interesting because the owners are protected from personal liability, except for a little bit, and except that it only applies to like accountants and doctors and attorneys.
Yeah, they're kind of like specialty fees.
They really are. And really, they're not as good as LLCs. They're not as flexible. So nobody uses them.
Yeah, I was going to say that seems fairly legacy. I don't see those much anymore. What about the PC? That's one that kind of shows up.
We're not there yet. You're asking a great question.
I'm ahead of the curve. I'll bring it back later.
All right, good.
So
we've crossed out sole proprietorships. We've crossed out partnerships. We're crossing out LLPs. The next one is a limited partnership, not a limited liability partnership, but a limited partnership.
Okay.
In that case, passive investors are protected, but there is a general partner who makes all the decisions and his house is on the line.
Okay.
Also not a good idea. So we're going to cross that one out.
Okay.
That leaves us with LLCs and corporations.
Okay.
When we get to that part of the discussion, I always say, who is your accountant? Because this is a tax question. The liability protections are the same in either one. It's a question of what is the tax effect.
Can I mention that I'm going to make some comments, and maybe we'll just sort of spin off of this, but there seem to be a handful of other questions that come up in there too. I mean, the tax question is like, you know, do you get an S corp or do you keep an LLC and have it taxed as an S corp or not?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. But the S-Corp does have some different features than LLCs.
Oh, it does.
Right?
Absolutely.
So you can keep an LLC, but tax like an S-Corp, maintain LLC features. Or you could have an S-Corp, tax like an S-Corp, because it only gets taxed like an S-Corp.
Right.
But it has a different feature set than the LLC. And it has a separate set of features from a C-Corporation.
Right. So for the actual form of entity is LLC or corporation.
Okay. And okay. So corporation is
now,
the subchapter.
Yes. Well, okay. So then corporation can be taxed one of two ways, as a C corporation or as an S corporation.
Okay.
And if you were thinking of it as a spectrum, on the left-hand side, you have LLCs, and they are simple, and mm-hmm. they are historically the worst tax deal. And historically, on the right-hand side, is a C corporation, which historically was the most complex and was the best tax deal.
But that's sort of been historically muddied. In the last decade or so.
It's like you're reading my mind,
oh,
Dave.
Oh, okay.
So then,
well, I am a financial guy.
Yeah, sure. So then, like, in 2017, there were a bunch of changes to the tax code, and they took away some deductions from the C corporations, and they created a new deduction that applies to everything but C corporations called the Qualified Business Income Deduction, QBID.
Yes.
And it says that 20% of distributions are not taxable at all, blah, 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 blah. Long story short, I set up almost no C corporations these days.
Yeah. It's when I think about, I'm going to give like my really simplified version.
Sure.
But I don't tell people to do any of these things. That's just when I'm saying, well, here's kind of what I know. And then I say, and you should go talk to someone like Derek.
Right.
What I kind of know is, LLCs for most small operations tend to work pretty well most of the time. And the election is whether you do taxed as just a sole proprietor versus an S corporation.
Yes, so the taxed by, taxed like, is a whole separate discussion.
Yeah, and generally speaking, if your LLC is making any money, you probably go S corp.
You probably do,
right?
Yes.
But again, it's case by case. S corporations are different, like if you're trying to raise capital and you want to bring in partners with different weightings and so forth, that you can bring in up to 100 people and you don't have to register it as a security.
Right.
So S corporations can be interesting if you're packaging up groups of people. And then I say, and you can go talk to Derek about who can vote and who can't and who's in charge and who's not and how the money gets dealt with and so forth.
There are some rules in S corporations that sometimes folks aren't aware of. For example, your 100 people, none of them can be C corporations. And if they're going to be S corporations, they have to be a certain kind of S corporation. And the profit has to be distributed in accordance with share ownership. That's not necessarily true in an LLC. You could do special allocations.
All right. So, and this is really, if you really want to get into the weeds, this is CPA stuff. This is when you start chasing around basis in companies too. So when you're looking at money in versus money out and how the basis in the entity is tracked. So, and that really, I mean, like you start getting over my head of like, I turn it over to the CPAs because they got great software for this, right? But the concepts I think are still sound. It's like, so the S corporation, much more specialized, I think.
I'm gonna disagree with you.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So LLCs are definitely what you want for rental property. When you're talking about an operating business, there is a threshold at which an S corporation makes more sense.
Ah.
But it is not a hard and fast rule. So I always say, talk to your accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my favorite accountants put the threshold somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 of take home. If you're in that range, or if you're above 50, I guess is a better way to say that, you probably want to be taxed as an S corporation.
Is this in reference to the way Social Security gets treated in the distributions?
No.
Oh, okay.
Has nothing to do with that.
Look at that. See, I'm learning.
Good
on
question,
the show.
Though. It what well maybe it is. I don't know. It's a. I'm not an accountant, but mm-hmm. I do know somewhere between 50 and 100. The bigger qualified business income deduction in an LLC is lower than the savings on payroll taxes in an S corporation. And that tends to be where you're trying to figure out.
I can see the crossover point. So there is a threshold. Yeah, because here's something a lot of people don't understand. Again, if you're not a business owner, some of this is just like, what are these guys talking about, right? But I'm going to keep it really simple, and then we'll go to break, and then you come back and you give me your favorite home stretch of what we want to cover with what's left of the entity.
Okay.
But the idea is, if you have a business that's doing fairly well, it's oftentimes advantageous to pay yourself a salary, but not all of the money the business makes is delivered to you as salary. Some of it is delivered as shareholder distributions or the equivalent of a bonus, because there is a different tax treatment for Social Security.
Right.
And so if it's big enough, that can be a savings, because it can be taxed lower if you break those distributions apart. And again, it's going to come back to what have we been saying the whole time? Who's your CPA, right? Like who's your tax pro? Because that's how you optimize this stuff.
Right.
Right. And you got the legal guy and the numbers guy going, well, don't you guys do that? It's like, well, it's like staying at a Holiday Inn Express, right? We know about it, but that's not what we're licensed to do.
I like to think I know enough to ask the right questions.
Yes. And that's a big part. We're pretty good librarians, right? Anyway, let's grab our last break of the day here. When we come back, we've got the C Corporation animal. We still haven't quite, you know, figured out, like, what, does somebody need that anymore? And you're saying, maybe.
Ever?
All right. Well, let's unpack that, but we got to take this last break. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Derek Simmons.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, we're getting right back into this as quick as possible because with only a few minutes left, I want every second. I have a special guest in studio with me, Derek Simmons, and we are talking about stuff in your wheelhouse today.
We are, right? Which I appreciate.
Everybody that's an investor out there, by the way, newsflash, this stuff is actually still connected even if you're not a business owner. Okay, some of the things that we're talking about are relevant to you. It's just maybe on the periphery. I'll tell you. But first, I want, Derek, you were talking about like the corporate elections. Like, do you do an LLC? Do you do an S corp? Do you do a C corp?
Right.
And there are a few different reasons. And then one of them was like, well, how do you choose? You could choose how they get taxed.
Right. So if you came to see me and we talked through, do you want to be an LLC or a corporation? What does your accountant prefer?
Yes.
Then we're going to set you up the way that you want to be. So if you want to be an S corporation, I would set you up as an S corporation. If you want to be an LLC, I would set you up as an LLC because it lines up on all the forms. If you set yourself up as an LLC and then elect to be taxed as an S corporation, you're going to have a disconnect at some point. Not fatal. Totally, you could totally deal with it, but why?
Right.
You'd want to set it up the way that lines up.
If you had the chance to kind of just, this is the idea of like, hey, I used to be in a business and now all these things I learned, here's the things I would never do again, right? Well, maybe don't do them to start.
Well, so the way that it works is you can set yourself up as whatever entity under state law you want. You could set yourself up as a limited partnership, even though we crossed that one out earlier.
Yeah, even though that's a terrible idea,
and
you
then
could still do the wrong thing.
You could have your accountant file a form with the IRS that says, yeah, we know we're a limited partnership, but we actually want to be taxed as a C corporation. Or you can elect to be taxed however it is you want to.
Okay.
So
can you do that with all the entities?
You can. You could be
like
a sole
proprietor.
A C
corporation and say, I elect to be taxed like a sole proprietor.
You can. Now, there are rules that follow after you do that.
It sounds really dumb.
That are,
let's unring all of the benefits.
Yeah.
But
really, the only two you're ever going to choose are, well, three. Sole proprietorship, you might be taxed as that.
Mm-hmm.
You might be taxed as a partnership. And you might be taxed as an S corporation.
Okay.
Now, that's different than being a partnership. You could be an LLC taxed as a partnership, and that's totally okay. But the general rule is I would set you up with what you want to be. Well, now, what if somebody comes to me and says, I already set up an LLC, and now I want to be taxed as an S corporation?
Now we got to change.
Well, now you've got two options. One is you can actually go through and convert the LLC to a corporation and change your name to end with Inc. Instead of LLC.
Yeah. I know this because we did this.
Yes, you can do that. It is also possible to file this election form that says, hey, IRS, we know we're an LLC, but please tax us as an S corporation. You can do that. You've got that disconnect issue.
Right.
And it's not fatal. People deal with it all the time. I'm just saying, if you were setting it up in the first place, set it up as what you want to be.
And just so you know, you may set it up with one thing and it's allowed to change, right? Businesses, they grow, they shrink, things change. And so I think the idea is just that it can be handled, but if you could set it up, you know, out of the gate strong, that's easier, right? That's
exactly
what I'm hearing you say.
Exactly.
Okay. So I know I'm going to pivot a second. Well, first, is there any other critical stuff that you want to add to this? Because I got like a simple question, I think.
No, hit me with the simple question.
So the simple question is, it's kind of about LLCs, but I think it may be true for corporate entities in general, right? There's these two different types of players in there, members and managers.
Right.
And can you help, can you sort of unpack for me, what are these roles in these corporate entities?
Yes.
And am I missing any roles?
All right. So first of all, we're just talking about LLCs.
Okay. So this is just LLCs.
This is not corporations.
Okay.
LLCs are either member managed. That means the owners have all the rights to sign stuff.
Okay.
Or manager managed, which means the managers are the people that have the right to sign stuff. A good example of the difference might be if I want to set up a business and give an ownership interest to my children, who are great people, but maybe I don't want them signing contracts.
Okay.
So they could be the members, they're the owners, but in a manager-managed company, I could be the manager and make all the decisions and sign all the contracts.
So real quickly, I'm gonna try to use this as a bit of a segue too. There's actually a reason you might intentionally do this. Maybe the kids aren't owners of the business, but you introduce them and start making them owners of the business.
Yes, you might gift them an interest over time.
Exactly.
It happens frequently that for estate planning purposes,
yes,
we set up a business that is both owned and managed by the parents.
Yes.
But then over time, they gift an ownership interest so that the kids become members, but they still aren't making the decisions.
Right. And one of the advantages of doing something like this is if you have too much stuff, then when you die, the state wants you to pay your estate. You're gone, right? But what's left over, your estate, it gets taxed.
Yes, I talk about estate taxes. You die and the government takes some.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
And so the idea would be, well, if you could give it to the people that you wanted to get it before you died, it's no longer in your estate to be taxed.
The government gets less.
Right. And so the reason that might be beneficial is for the estate tax savings. The reason it might not be beneficial is because you may be gifting a tax liability at the same time, which would then, you know, your tax liability becomes the person you gifted to's tax liability.
Although I don't see that very often. And of course, I'm not the accountant, but usually liabilities are not going to exceed income in an operating business. Because the business shuts itself down pretty quickly if that keeps going.
Right, right. Well, I'm thinking more about basis if it was going to get sold.
Oh.
Right. Let's say that you had a business and you gifted it away, and you know, versus inheriting a business, you get a fresh start with your basis at inheritance if you inherit it straight across. Whereas if you were to gift it, then the original basis the building goes to. And if it gets sold, then there's potentially a higher capital gain to the heir.
I'd put it this way. If I'm the kid inheriting something, I don't care if it's got zero basis. Give it to me all day.
Yeah. We are actually in the weeds of financial planning right now. What I will tell you is if you're wondering about whether or not to gift a business and you have the question of whether or not basis, the tax on the gain of a sale afterwards versus your estate tax, that's a calculation you can run and you can decide, you know, just, well, which makes more sense, right? So that's just a math game. We don't have to get too worried about it. But I do think this is a neat time to, just for a second, we talk about trusts a lot of the time when you're on here. I think it's fun to say, you know, all of this stuff that you've talked about with the different types of entities all involved getting things titled in the name of the appropriate entity.
Right.
A trust is actually another type of entity.
It is. It doesn't bring with it limited liability.
It does not. It's really just an extension of you. But what it does do is it controls things from the grave.
It can. And
right?
it takes it out of probate, which is a whole show all by itself.
It is. And the summary is simply this, because we love this, the quote, right? Like, since dead people can't sign stuff, that's what probate's for. But a trust pre-sign something.
That's true.
So that it doesn't have to be signed after you die. It already has the chain of custody predetermined, and now a court's not needed to change title.
All true. Right?
And so those are just really simple things. And you know what? Go check our history in our all of the shows we've done. Anything with Derek on it, you probably find a few hints about trust here. I just can't resist. He's just too fun to. Okay. All right, so we've established that, you know, there are reasons to have entities. There's different ways to tax them. you know, if somebody's walking in the door today and they're like trying to figure out, do I need an entity and where do I go? What do I do? What do you tell them?
All right. Well, the first thing to do is decide what you want to be. And then I would have me set it up. And the reason I, or some attorney.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
they're
okay
not
to say you in this case,
not
you're
gonna,
here.
Yeah, they're not going to make the easy mistakes that many people do.
Yeah.
The ones I see most often are people file articles of organization and they think they're done.
Right.
They don't have an operating agreement. They didn't transfer any property in. They think they're done and they have no liability shield for real.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a number of things. And by the way, we have just scratched the surface of this, too. You know, we didn't even get to the idea of entities that own entities.
Yeah.
Like when holding companies exist or disregarded entities for tax purposes. I mean, there's some really cool stuff. That
I've got
done.
One more
Hit
that
me.
Must be discussed.
OK.
If you own a business with another person, that must have a real operating agreement that talks about what happens if you disagree. What happens if one of you dies? You've got to have a real operating agreement, and a lot of people skip that part.
Yeah. I think what I'll simply put it this way. If you're going to have a business, have a business. Don't play at having a business, right? So a lot of people get into this, let's save $100 here or there, and they don't want to put together the right documentation. This is a simple one, guys. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
I occasionally have people come to me in a partnership and say, how do I get out? And I tell them, you can't without going to court, because you didn't have a document that said how.
Yeah. And so, as I once heard it said, plan for the divorce before you get married.
Right.
In business, right? Not in love. All right. Look, but that's up to you. We are out of time. Derek, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
How do they reach you if they want to?
541-677-7185.
All right. And as for Little John Financial, it's littlejohnfs.com and 541-375-0898. Till next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
I'm Derek Simmons.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on this station.